Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you'll need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s, still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day, and Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything, and you won't believe how simple it is.
Apparently, this is the Blue Brands Wrestling Perspective podcast. Like a host torn between two lovers, it's Ace Steele and Lars Fredriksson that's back.
I show up, you guys are wearing the exact same, basically, color scheme. And I think to myself, because I was originally wearing just a white t-shirt with red and black. And I said, you know what? This podcast is about coming together. It's about unity. It's about bringing like-minded people to a place to express their love for one thing that is called pro wrestling. So I decided to go into my t-shirt drawer because I knew I had a t-shirt that matches the exact same colors you both were wearing. I'm happy to be back. It's been a fucking month. Ace, on behalf of myself and Dennis, thank you for lending us your expertise and being such a great co-host while I was away. Now you can fuck off.
Yeah, go away now.
Can I, guys?
Would it be funny if he actually did
leave? Yeah, that would be rad, actually. Yeah.
All right, Ace, please come back.
Still my earbuds in.
Yeah. Well, listen, we definitely appreciated it. And, Lars, I haven't even told you this, but we've got... hilarious story. At the very beginning, there was one guy who hated the idea, one fan, when we first announced it. He email bombed us. I still have, 5,000 to 7,000 emails I have to junk and clear out of. Yeah, dude, email bomb is no joke. Like, our email is destroyed right now. So I want to tell that guy to fuck off. But we had so many encouraging emails talking about how much Ace being on the podcast has changed their opinions of him. I've showed Ace many of them, like I told you guys I would. And Ace, man, this has been great. A nice little experiment for you.
I love it. I've never really gotten a chance to do anything like this. I've been obviously a podcast, guest, but never a chance to actually ask the questions. Never even had a chance to do, I've done commentary over the years a little bit in some of the promotions I work, but never a chance to just have an outing like this. And it was great. It was great to get the talk with you. If that changed, just the public perception of me, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I am who I am. But this is for the greater good, is for all of this is for the greater good. And we got to talk a lot of good business over the last month. Yeah. Even though it was sans Lars, I mean, we had great times talking together. So this is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, you know what? Honestly, here's the thing. To have somebody like you who knows the business, has worked the business, has been in the business for as long as you have, you know, to have that insider look and that different perspective, after all, this is the wrestling perspective, you know, I think brings a wealth of not only experience, but knowledge to this program. And I think that, like, I'm sure, you know, some of the interviews that I saw you guys, especially the one with, Chris Hero, it's like, it was definitely a different kind of interview because, you know, we've had Petey Williams, you know, on this show as a co-host, but having you is an even a more different perspective than Petey. So I honestly found those quite interesting. And I hope that, you know, just because I'm back doesn't mean, you know, because we still have our segment 10 minutes with Ace, but I would love at some point for the three of us to, you know, triple team, you know, a guest. I think that would be real fun. And I'm not being sexual, Dennis, so don't get any ideas with your falsies, okay?
Dude, I was so excited for half a second. Anyways, let's
stop. The man's divorced. He needs variety.
That's right. Hey, times are tough, Lars. You know, dinner's not going the way I thought it was, all right? So let's quit ball washing them and let's move on to the Q&As because we got some really good questions. Brent, right off the bat, wants to know, did we watch Lucha Underground and what did we think? And do you think Lucha Underground, if it was rebooted, would be successful today?
Ace, you go first.
I didn't watch much of it on the first run. So I've caught it on the El Rey Network and I'll sit there and I'll just have it on in the background. But to see the talented people that were there and are we 5-6 years removed from this thing or longer? I don't know the time frame. No. I think it was a hell of a concept. I be honest. I mean, I'm a traditionalist. I'm a pro wrestling traditionalist. Behind me, Harley Race, Bruiser Brody, Terry Funk, you know, traditional, crazy, whatever. But I love the variety of wrestling. I think that's what makes wrestling in such a unique art form of a sport. But I thought Lucha Underground with just having the plots and the different sub. I mean, that's what wrestling is anyway, right? You know, like the good stuff. Like, again, when you talk about people jumping out of their seats to watch people talk or the way they react to people talk, whether it be CM Punk or a Bloodline, you know, they captivate an audience. I think they were onto something here, and I think it should be brought back. I think a lot of that talent has, you know, been moved on and signed in other places, but there's so many other people out there and the concept is phenomenal.
What do you think,
Lars? Yeah, I thought it was a great show and I was a fan. And honestly, I think it would work at any point. I, you know, in the future, in the past and in the present, like, I think it was a great show with a great concept. I thought the talent was wonderful. It was a lot of indie guys. I mean, even Vinny Massaro, a guest of ours, you know, was on the show. Obviously some Mexican stars. So it's like, I love the Lucha style. I mean, I'm a California guy. So luckily for me over the, you know, the course of growing up, I was able to see a lot of different styles of wrestling, either on TV or in person. You know, it's a lot of, some of the Mexican promotions like CMLL or AAA would run shows here in the Bay Area. So, you know, I was able to attend those in person, see the TV shows, obviously. I love when you get to know, I don't speak a whole lot of Spanish, right? So you're watching Lucha Underground, you know, sometimes they would give, you know, the backstories or whatever on Lucha guys that maybe I, you know, never even knew so much about. So it was that much more interesting for me to kind of dive in. So I love that kind of stuff.
It, for me, it changed the way storytelling was because it came out at that perfect time where wrestling storylines were 2 to 3 weeks long and you moved on. And here dropped this show that had seasons and one storyline lasted a whole season. And I really thought right there was I don't want to say the right way to do it, but it was refreshing. I got to sit back and I don't think it had the cinematic, you know, that we were used to in wrestling aspect to it, but it really had a movie feel to it from a wrestling perspective. Yeah.
Did you guys agree?
Did you guys watch Wrestling Society X? I think that's what it was called on MTV. Was that what it was called?
Yeah, it was called that. Yeah. I actually have never caught up on that.
I didn't either.
I just didn't get to it. And I have a lot of people I know that worked it behind the scenes and on the show. I'll be flat honest. I've never gave it, you know, a bit of attention.
I didn't either. I don't even know if you can find it anywhere.
I think I might have watched a few episodes, but, you know, MTV, like when they stopped playing music videos, they kind of lost me. So maybe I'm a relic. So never mind. Next question.
You look like a Real World fan, though.
Wow.
This is the Real World, Ace.
Oh, brother.
Paul from Tempe says, hey, Ace, when you were a coach, hey, Ace, got a couple questions. When you were a coach, who was your most reachable talent, the talent who was the most put together when they showed up through the door?
Ooh. And I'm going to assume he means at the Performance Center. I mean, because I'm an ongoing.
That's your history.
Yeah. You could look back at Punk, the infancy, and I set it on his DVD where athletics, he excelled at later in changing his body. He always had that intangible, like he connects with the crowd, right? And it took him a minute to be ready for prime time. I said this with Hero when we first broke in and did TNA. I was ready at that time. He was not. Fast forward a year later, he's ready and then taking off. And then I was going other places too, but we'll jump back to the PC times because over the years I see different people throughout. And it's very topical because he's hitting right now, but Grayson Waller walked into the Performance Center, not a 20-year-old kid, but upper 20s to 30. So he was already on borrowed time on their schedule because of age. To us, fuck, wouldn't you want to be 30? At least with what you know now to have that 30-year-old body again, right? But that was the only thing, you know, that would be a drawback against them, because when they let a lot of people go at the Performance Center, it was age-based. It was age-based or, you know, what are we going to do with them at this point? Blah, blah, blah. The minute he walked into the PC, he was ready to work, ready to learn, never once stopped working hard, would do anything I asked him in my class, and I was his coach from day one. To the point where I see him walk out and face Edge on SmackDown and holy balls. Like, he looked like he belonged. He looked like he belonged. And that's, to me, and that's not just my compliment. I'm sure others have said the same thing. He belonged in that environment, in that match. I think he's the number one guy over the last couple of years that I've been in touch with that walked in and, you know, knocked it out of the park. Because when they let go of all those other guys, there was a major shift, and they only kept a few of the independent talent, and he stuck around and then rose right to the top because he was ready made. He was working those 205s. He was listening to things I had talked about, saying these guys are in the corner. Shawn Michaels, Triple H are watching you. Other people are watching you. Take advantage of all of this, you know. So he's the guy.
And by the way, Edge took his career, Waller's career, to the next level with just You Swam. That, I mean, that whole line, he's a made man now from here on out, I think. And it's amazing in wrestling how when you pass the torch, some guys do it, some guys don't. But when you do it, it's just one word. And that word right there, it I felt so good for the guy, and I've never met him.
Yeah, he's a hard worker, 100% hard worker.
Jason, Wrestling Geek 14 on Twitter wants to know, hey y'all, wrestling question here for you guys. What did you guys think of Eve Marie in wrestling? Do you think that she was a viable wrestling talent? I'll say this. This is me. I think she was a relic of the not the wrestling TNA, but the tits and ass era in wrestling, where, you know, they just parade the women out in swimsuits and to sell sex. Maybe if they took their time, I don't know what wrestling, if she went to wrestling school, I mean, obviously, but she was a beauty, but I don't think she was made to be an in-ring talent.
Yeah, go ahead, Ace. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say, I never was a fan, and especially of that era. Like, I really would tune out at that point just because I just wasn't really, that's not really why I tuned in to watch wrestling. I understood that it was part of the show and, you know, there was, you know, maybe some meaning or something would unfold or whatever, but it was that, you know, that era of women's wrestling is not something that I look back and think, man, that was a game changer. Like, I look more at like the knockouts and look at that kind of thing as a game changer for women's wrestling. I don't really look at the WWE or that era or that time, no matter what company, other than maybe Impact or TNA at the time or whatever, Impact. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like, it's like a weird loaded question, you know, I was like going through my Rolodex in my mind if I even remembered what she looked like.
Yeah.
So I recall her coming into the PC on her last run. She came in and she came in to work. She walked right into Norman Smiley's class, which a lot of the ladies that have trained in the past at the Performance Center, they gravitate to Norman because he's got a great way of explaining things, and he does handle a lot of the ladies' classes there. He'll have them, and then Sarah Del Rey will have them later or somewhere in the mix, you know. But I did see her coming in work, and I know she did work on the West Coast where she's, I believe, based with other trainers out there or a trainer. I would hear of her training. So I got to give her credit there. The era you guys are talking about, I have no idea what that is. And I hate to say that being someone that's in, you know, in wrestling, but there's a portion of the business that I tuned out on or didn't pay attention to. So I don't know if she was in the Tough Enough period. I don't know when she rolled in, to be honest with you, but I do recall her on this last run coming to the Performance Center to work on her work. And again, an age-based release, ridiculous. Ridiculous if she's got the maturity to do what they're asking her to do, if it was simply because of age. I think that's horse puck. If you're looking at age, I'm not saying she's equivalent to Trish, but as far as age goes, I mean, that's a fine line with Trish completely, right?
Well, I think Trish Stratus is the most overrated wrestler, women's wrestler that there ever was. I will counter argue anybody who says that she was some sort of, I can name 10 women that Mickie James blows her out of the water, same era, same time frame as a pro wrestler. Mickie James has stood the test of time. And if you look how Trish has been received back, even Lita's another one that blows her out of the water. They might not have had the look that she had, and that was really where I think a lot of the importance was placed with her. But, and not knocking her in any way, but, well, yeah, I am fucking knocking her because she was, you know, when you're rude to me once, fuck you. I'm never going to have a nice thing to say about you, but and that's a whole other podcast. But I understand why people say what they say, but I'm always going to have the counter argument and say, no, she wasn't really as great as you want to, you know. Hindsight is 2020, right? And 2020, if I remember correctly, she wasn't all that great. I thought there was way better wrestlers, you know. Sorry.
So counterpoint is she was brought into this business as a fitness model. And I recall
strike one,
but not really to me, because for me, she worked hard through that era to work with the Fit Finleys and give us the best that they, you know, many people will credit Fit for, and he does deserve that credit. So when I see her come in, and I've seen others, and this may be along the same era or Christy Hemme and stuff like that might be after, I think comparing her to Mickey is, again, apples to oranges. Mickey's always wanted to be a wrestler.
But that, no, Ace, we're talking about the same fucking business. It's kind of like, you know, if I come into the musician world as a personal trainer, you know, then what I'm trying to do here is not necessarily, you know, for the love of music, it's not going to be about that. It's probably about establishing my own personal goals, right? So that's right then and there. I might go and try to learn guitar. Ace Frehley might give me lessons, right? But it doesn't mean that I'm going to be the Mickey James, you know, because I practiced a lot. You know, it does, that doesn't, I'm not a musician to begin with, right? I'm a personal trainer. So it's not apples to oranges, in my opinion, as a fan, because I'm looking at it like, okay, if you're walking into the door and you're saying you're going to be something, then be that something, right? And I understand that Trish worked a lot harder, but I can't say that, you know, you cannot compare Mickey James to Trish Stratus. Mickey, you know, I might have identified with Mickey more, but I don't think it's a fair, in fair comparison.
We disagree. I'm looking at this not as a fan, as someone that's had to work at this and the work they had to put into this industry. So if she was flippant about her past wrestling years, and I'd be like, well, then, you know, fuck you, like, you shit on her business. But she's, you know, to me, she's taken care of it, especially with as much as she had the ride of roads and yada, yada. And when they brought her into this, I don't even know. It's kind of like when Tori Wilson was made to wrestle, like, she was in WCW to be, what, a dancer? And they made her wrestle? Like, why the fuck are they making her wrestle, you know? But, again, she rose to the top and rose to the occasion and took a hold of it. Like, I think at some point, especially now, where she's helping out somebody with a rub, like Zoe Stark, that needs that rub, she's using her, and I've liked her matches. I mean, again, coach versus fan. Like, I've liked what she's done, simpler. I've liked what she's done and produced. Simple is better for me, especially at this point. I'm not looking for a mind-blowing move, as long as she can pull off what she's got to pull off and really the story that she's pulling off. So
that's fair. And I totally understand that I mean, this is what I love about this show, is that, like, you know, you come from a place that's the business. I'm not in it. Right. And thank fucking God. Thank fucking God. You know, I'm more, you know, but I guess what you're saying makes perfect and utter sense to me, because you're looking at it from a totally different view. I just hated when, you know, I hated the reality TV shows, Tough Enough and stuff like that. I hated that shit. I wanted my pro wrestlers to be beer drinking ass kickers, you know, whether you're male or female or whatever you are. I don't really give a shit. You have to have some believability. So if I know your background is you were a fucking D-list celebrity on a reality show, I'm not going to get behind you in the pro wrestling. I'm just not that. It seems very shallow, right? And that's not really how I approach my life. I'm very passionate, right? So I want to connect with somebody who's as passionate as me. And I think, you know, as human beings, we have that bullshit filter, right? So That's probably why I have a judgment, because, and also she was fucking rude to me. Next question.
There you go.
All right. Hey guys, he didn't leave a name. I went back and recently watched Blood and Guts. Why does AEW pull off this kind of match so much better than WWE? Is it the way they put it together? Is it the mathematical equations that us fans can't understand? ? He's kind of right though. I kind of went back when I got this and I went, all right. And I was at the Blood and Guts here in Detroit. And then I went back and watched one of the NXTs, and I was like, you know, it's not so much, by the way, that I think it's better. It's just different kinds of matches. AEW's more, you know, that Southern, you're going to bleed, I'm going to throw you through it, we're going to make this look good. And WWE's produced. And I don't think it's so much better or worse. I just think it's too totally, it's steak or filet mignon. It's just two different cuts.
That was the worst pronunciation of a filet mignon I've ever heard in my entire fucking life.
I know.
Life.
I'm going to blame it.
I have the filet.
Thanks, guys.
I hope that gets fucking pull quoted. Anyways, Ace.
They don't even know I'm on the show. It's okay.
Well, I can tell you two things. Let's go back to the origins of a cage match to me. A cage match doesn't happen unless there's a reason. It just shouldn't happen week after week, right? But a cage to me means blood. So anytime I would see a cage, and I don't know at what point during the 2000s, blood was outlawed in WWF, but it was fucking outlawed.
Here's what I found.
Hey, shut the fuck up. My watch. Fucking thing. A cage match constitutes blood to me. we're in the final. It's Flair, Ronnie Garvin. I'm going to see some blood. I don't care if it's the road. Dusty Rhodes is in a cage. I'm going to see blood because your face is getting grinded into steel or whatever the cage is made of nowadays. I know AEW's is steel. They allow people to do blood. Overuse, not happy with all the time, of course. But first of all, it's called blood and guts. So we're going to see some blood. We're going to see some motherfucker bleed and pay for what they did. War Games, I could tell you the day this is behind the curtain, they, you know, yeah, they get to rehearse things a lot more. There's not a lot of rehearsal. To me, things, I mean, nowadays, there are certain things. If you're doing big stunts, you've got to rehearse stuff. You've got to rehearse stuff or get a feel. You don't just climb up to a cage for the first time and go, yep, jumping off this motherfucker. You got to climb up there, get set, look around and go, okay, where's the kendo stick going to be? Where's the fucking chairs? Are they over here? Hey, make sure this gimmick's under here. Now, personally, I think the gimmick is in the cage itself. You're being handed this gift. Kind of like, again, another thing, the pure title for Ring of Honor. You have rules with the pure title. There's no close fist, three rope breaks, blah, 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 blah. Utilize those. These are gifts given to you to create this match. If you don't use those, I feel like you're missing the boat. The cage is your fucking gimmick. So when your head gets, you're stopping before you get rammed into it. You get your face grinded into it. You're getting stuck between it, taking backdrops into it. You name it. Like, I just feel like there should be blood. And yes, they do. It's a lot more meticulous at WWE with what and where and where you're at. And that could come through in the difference in the shows and the production. Production values are top notch all the way around. I'm just saying how people take their match and present it to you. That's where the difference is going to come. But I think blood's a huge thing.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you on that. I kind of see cage match or dog collar match or whatever it is, some stipulated match, something that's basically screams violence. There needs to be violence. And it needs, yes. But it also needs to tell a story. It needs to, you know, the violence needs to have a reason, you know, and like you said, if you're just starting off somewhere with, you know, Joe Schmo versus, you know, Dick Van Dyke, it's like, there's nothing emotional for you to grab onto either guy. Right. So you can just be fans of one or the other, but if there's no story between them, then it doesn't make any sense. And you're just doing it, you know, just to do it. It's like, you know, when guitar players used to fucking, you know, do the Star Spangled Banner, it's like, okay, now you're having a talent attack. Next, please. It's like, you know what I'm saying? So that's what it reminds me of. Oh shit, here we go. Here's a drum solo. You know what I mean? Great. You know what I mean? It's like, now I'm going to be here for 15 minutes listening to this guy, unless you're like, you know, Peter Chris or what, you know what I mean? But my point is that when you're advertising blood and guts and you do not deliver that, then you failed at your job. Okay.
Yeah.
I would call it something completely different. You know, they, you know, it's like calling it Hell in a Cell. Like, that screams to me the most violent thing. And it's probably because of the people who have done those and made that gimmick possible or gimmick popular. It's like, it's hard to follow that act. Right. So, you know, if you're not going to do those types of stunts or those types of physical violence or even emotional violence on the watcher, you know, then call it something completely different, you know, rage in a cage, whatever. I don't know that. I think that's probably already something anyways, but where AEW does deliver, they deliver on that. The problem is that you see it on fucking TV every week. You, when it does happen, you're not emotionally, you don't have an emotional response to it anymore. You're just like, oh, dude's bleeding again. Big fucking deal. That's the problem, I think, you know, with some of it. Like, it doesn't. So when it does happen, it's not as big of a deal, right? So, but the original question is, who does it better? AEW, any day of the week, because they do it.
Yeah, I agree. Alex from Hershey, Pennsylvania. I've been waiting for another Q&A from you guys. Big question. With the recent backlash between LA Knight being called a ripoff of Stone Cold and The Rock, and the fans loving him. Is there a right way and a wrong way for this situation? And hasn't ripping off other gimmicks in the past just been accepted outside of a 10-year period?
Yeah. So what? Big fucking deal. Are they calling him out on it? Like, who's calling him out on it? Someone that just has an opinion about it? I mean, the guys, the crowd's biting on what it is. He's successful. It might be a revamp of whatever, but is there really anything that super original and pro? Like, things get recycled all the time, and it's not like he fucking popped out of wrestling school yesterday and started doing this gimmick. He's been doing it a long fucking time. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, and to say that you're plagiarizing anything in wrestling, that's fucking the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Because if you think about wrestling, it's all plagiarism. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, it's like you can call the Canadian Destroyer 100 different fucking things. You know, Bad Bunny does it. Like, is he plagiarizing Petey Williams? Does anybody, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's or every, you know, it's ridiculous because if you're being held in the same breath as a Stone Cold or the Rock, you win. If they're talking about you, you know, right, saying, oh, you're like Stone Cold or the Rock, well, then fucking A, you're doing your job. And not only you're doing your job, but you're doing it at such a fucking high level that's the references that you're being compared to. How is that a lose? I don't fucking understand that at all. Is that supposed to be like, you know, a put down? And LA Knight is probably one of the most charismatic, talented, verbal wrestlers the WWE has. You know, they have very few of those types of talents. And I get more angry about the way that he's used more than I would say he's plagiarizing somebody.
All right. Rob says, just got done with the Chris Hero interview. It might be one of the best talks I've ever listened to in a long time. Can someone please tell me how WWE dropped the ball on him? I don't know. You know, I'll say this. I like Chris. I was a huge fan of him, still am. I watched some of his NXT run, but at some point I just kind of, you just saw that, you know, he was there, and it's not his fault because he went out and delivered each week, and it was a bummer, you know. But when Chris Hero comes out with the name Cassius Ohno, you just, really? So I don't know how or why they dropped the ball on him, or if they even did, honestly. I don't know. I'll let you two answer that one.
Or Ace, you go, Ace.
I just think he was hired to be a mechanic. They do that. They hire mechanics to help get other guys going, and there are times they do that. There's plenty of guys that they've hired for that reason, and they can turn, you can turn the corner for sure. Or it, you know, it doesn't happen for him. I think he was hired as a mechanic, hired to help. And a mechanic, if anyone's wondering what that term means, in pro wrestling, it's somebody that is very gifted or very astute, like an in-ring technical capabilities. And basically he's a coach, not called a coach. He's one that can get in-ring and exemplify what they're looking for, help teach, help move people around, help give them the feel. He's essentially a player coach, not called that. They'll dictate to him what they're looking for, but I don't think they ever really had a plan in mind for where they would push him to where we think, like, hey, I got Chris Hero tomorrow. Well, shit, I'm booking him and, you know, this guy and that guy, and let's roll. You know, we got a main event. I don't think they looked at it at that point that way.
Yeah, you know, I've always was a fan of Chris Hero. As a matter of fact, I just saw him on last Saturday because he works with West Coast Pro. And since he's been involved, like, the show that I saw was much more fluid. It every match was different, even more different than before. I think he's got a great mind. He's a nice person. Obviously, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And I just think that, you know, he's like a wrestler's fan, a wrestling fan's wrestler. Does that make sense? Like, if you really, have you been watching, I think, for 25 years, you're going to love a guy like Chris Hero because he reminds you of an Arn Anderson or a worker, you know, and like you said, Ace, like, you know, explain mechanic. That's kind of like the player coach. He can get in there and do anything with anybody is pretty much kind of what it is in essence. Yep. Correct. So yes. And when we seen, I mean, you know, Hero, whether he's in a tag team or he's in a single or whatever it is, he's a performer and he makes guys look fucking incredible while looking incredible himself. And one of the things that I love about, you know, him and his matches over the years, he always made the opponent look strong, even though he might have beat him. And I think that's a very hard thing that's a lost art in a lot of ways in today's modern professional wrestling.
For sure.
But I also think that, like, doing it, and Ace, maybe you have a, you know, obviously you would have the knowledge, but I feel like that might be a harder job than what it is, because it's got to be very meticulous, right? Because you don't want to kill the guy, but you don't want to kill yourself at the same time, but you have to make it look like this guy's competitor is as competitive as you are. It just today wasn't his day.
Exactly. No, that's a fine art to do that. It's one thing to be able to get in a ring and put on a match. It's one thing to get in there and have a good match yourself and look like the star, but to help make that other person, or, you know, be uplifting for both. We just talked about Edge and Grayson Waller the other night. That was, I mean, as far as the debut and a guy not winning, a little more, it's very much along the same lines as what you're talking about, but they had star in mind for this guy, as opposed to maybe if Hero or someone is working, someone that's definitely, we didn't know the finish of the SmackDown match the other night, but in Hero's match, and he's working a guy who clearly is lower than him, but if he gives that guy enough, and it's all what he does, it's the bumps he takes, it's the bumps he doesn't take, it's the bumps the other guy doesn't take, it's all, again, very meticulous and very thought out. And also, I mean, at one point you're like, that's not really rocket science, but, you know, how many covers does he go for and the guy kicks out? You know, how does this look? I mean, you throw all this in the pot, it really makes a difference, and it's a fine art to get to do that. When they say Terry Funk could work a broomstick, I mean, he can work a soppy broomstick. You still need a broomstick that walked around a little bit and could do stuff. But, you know, Terry Funk in that way too could elevate his opponent. Terry Funk worked Eddie Guerrero on either a Saturday night or like a worldwide TV taping a million years ago before we all had really heard of Eddie Guerrero. So this was a drop in a bucket. And I think Terry Funk was, I think I'm going to say that he was on the Flair run. I don't remember when this was, but look it up. And Terry Funk takes a young Eddie Guerrero and makes him a contender when he didn't have to do jack shit for him. He just needed to beat the shit out of him. But because of his relationship with the Guerrero family in Texas and yada, yada, you throw in whatever, and knowing Eddie's family, like he went in and took Eddie and he made just something out of that. Like, it was a one-off match, but holy shit, he did exactly what you're talking about. And it's not that easy. It takes a talented person.
All right, we got about 5 more questions. Let's try to get them in before the end of the show. Sam, can one of you assholes please explain to me when in wrestling did so many companies have so many championships? And if you could eliminate one or two, which ones would you eliminate?
Clearly he's talking to you two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the NWA back in, you know, having the trios, they called it the six-man, I believe, at the
six
time.
Six-mans, yeah.
Yeah, they had the television, they had the Mid-Atlantic, they had, I mean, when you think about that early NWA Saturday night show, I mean, it was, everybody was coming through that show. So the amount of titles that you were exposed to was infinite. It almost seemed like everybody that they were doing an interview held a championship. And yes, it was the NWA and it was different territory, sure. But the concept I had was like, everybody's a fucking champion, right? So there was a point where I felt like it was overkill, but I think, you know, in the case of like a WWE, you know, there should just be one champion, right? And I don't think there should be two world champions, or however they word it or phrase it or whatever. So that's a little bit of what it is. But like in the case of an AEW or an Impact or an MLW or NWA, like I like a variety of belts. I'm not mad at the Trios Championship at the AEW. I know there's a lot of people who just think it's stupid. I like it. And I think, if it's showcased right in the time and the place and the belt actually means something. And I think that's probably what the gripe is that they're not, the belts are not being presented as something prestigious. They're just there, you know? And I think that's the big problem. I think the problem is not actually how many belts there are, is how they're being presented. I don't know. I digress.
I'll say this, and I think I know exactly what you're saying, Lars. As a kid watching, WCW or NWA, I felt like that television title was just as big as the Intercontinental title or any other title on any other show. But you don't get that feeling anymore from the Intercontinental Championship or this championship or whatever championship is, being the United States title, if that's even still, or I don't know, but I don't know how you got away from that. And I don't know how you fix that. Ace?
I wish it was like the old days when I watched NWA. You had your television championship, United States Heavyweight Championship, and the World Heavyweight Championship. I knew that if you were the US title holder, they were always considered to be the number one contender to the world belt. Doesn't matter who held it. If it was in the Four Horsemen, all the titles at that one time, whoever had the U.S. belt, was the number one contender to the Flairs. That's how they, would round out, Wyndham would have been, I guess, at the time. That's how they protected Flair in the championship. But no matter who held those belts, it automatically put you in contention for the higher belt. I think in the 80s, they got completely away from that in WWF. Intercontinental belt. When Savage held it, meant he was in line for Hogan. And then that kind of fell off the wayside after Warrior, maybe. Mm-hmm. Just because you had that belt, they would move you on to a new program in the World Heavyweight Championship category. But you weren't the guy always going after. Maybe when Shawn had the belt and had the IC belt and Brett did, I don't know. Those are things I don't remember, but I think at some point they just moved away from all that and they dropped the rules on that. And I think things like that should be explained. Like Orange Cassidy should be top in line for a shot at MJF because MJF's the world champion. Well, Orange Cassidy's been defending the international championship he has. So that's like, is that the secondary title? You should be looking at MJF. Like, we should touch on that program because if you have this, that means I could go there. Like, should just be, steps to heaven, so to speak, for the freaking world title. Like, well, however you want to put, how grandiose, whatever you want to put a label on there. I wish exactly that they meant more, that each title meant more instead of, and NWA farted on all that when Crockett bought every territory. I've watched this a lot. Barry Windham's got a Western States Heritage UWF champions in there. Terry Taylor against Nikita Koloff for the TV championships. At least they unified them. But then Mike Rotunda's running around with the Florida belt. I don't know if it was Dutch Mantel or Bobby Jaggers had a Central States belt I saw. And they made a brand new belt because they bought Kansas City. And I was like, what in the fuck is going on? Like, I'm watching this now. I don't remember it back then when I was a kid because the only titles that mattered to me were the TV that Arn or Tully or somebody would work every Saturday. Or Magnum as the U.S. championship, like that meant something. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the world title that Flair was usually other places or eventually just down there. So,
yeah. And I also think that when the belts were part of the story or they were story arcs or they were part of a story to get you somewhere else, like you might be feuding with this guy, but because I'm holding this belt, my sights are here, but let me get finished with this business. Like, it meant something, it was either the pinnacle of the story or it was like, a big part of it, half of it, so I don't know. But
Amanda wants to know, Lars, I really enjoyed when you talked about the NWA. I think this comes back when we were talking about NWA. So I don't really remember what we had said, so keep that in mind. Okay. Amanda, Lars, I really enjoyed when you talked about the NWA and the feel for the show. Can you guys revisit this conversation and talk about, do you still think it would show up on the same networks that you originally thought? And what day and time do you think the NWA would be successful on a TV network?
Okay, so this is a very open-ended question, right? So
very much.
Okay.
I don't remember what we said was the networks we thought it would be the best feel for. So I
well, the reason why I love the NWA because it was Southern style wrestling. You know, it was real. Like, I mean, they tried to make it as real as possible, right? And you know, beer drinkers, hellraisers, right? Ass kickers, guys that you wouldn't want to fuck with in a bar. And if you did, they're going to beat your ass or whatever. Right. Like there was this aura around the company that it was like, it was realer, it was grittier, you know, than the WWF or the WWE at the time. The WWF was very shiny cartoons, you know, ice cream bars, you know, LJN toys, you know, whatever the fuck. There was like the Kiss, right? And then NWA was like AC/DC. It was dirty. It was like they're gonna get up on stage from the shit that they went to the show, and Kiss got into a costume and became this performance, right? That was the WWF. The NWA was AC/DC. It was more, you know, I don't know, legit in a sense. There was blood. You know, as far as the networks it would survive on now, I mean, I would think that like the same networks that, you know, AEW's on. I think, you know, this is the thing why I feel like, you know, I watch more AEW than I watch WWE, is because it's got that grittier Southern feeling. Now, do I have my issues with it? Fuck yeah, I do, of course. But like, if you look at the new Saturday night show Collision on AEW, that reminds me, even with the promo starting the show, that's some old WCW Saturday night shit. That gets me invested right from the very get-go. You're going to do this to me, blah, blah, this and that. The only thing that I hate about it is when people, okay, so this is a whole other thing, and maybe I don't know why I thought of it. I hate when people swear in their promos. I think it's stupid. I think it's a cheap way to try to get a reaction. It tells me you don't know what you're doing, and that you have to rely on son of a bitch, shit, fuck, whatever. You got to rely on these words to get yourself looking like a badass. And in a real fight, the real fighters never say a word, right? They just fucking knock you out, right? So I hate that part. That's the one part where I feel like it takes me out of, you know, the other night. Now I'm going to use an example. It was on Collision. It was a guy I really, really like. And he used shit, or yeah, he kicked the shit out of you or something. He didn't need, I think it was, I mean, I don't really want to throw the guy under the bus because I do like him, but he used it in his promo, and I was like, oh, God damn it. You just lost me there. It was like, you didn't need to do that. Like you were already there. You know, you didn't need, you know, anyways.
I actually agree with you on that 100%. And if you do occasionally drop a swear word, it should mean something like blood. And you know, he's mad, or you know, he's going to get you when he drops it. I hear shit or damn it or whatever 1,000 times a day, 1,000 times on wrestling shows now. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
You're talking to a guy that accidentally dropped the F-bomb. I said fuck on nationwide television last year on TBS. But the reason nobody really just crucified me for it is because I was in the moment, and that's exactly what happened. It was not a part of my verbiage. When I said, you get the fuck up, like I was like ramping myself up, like I got to get this motherfucker up. And I just slipped. everyone knew I slipped. No one knew no one blamed me and said I did it maliciously or as a key point to my promo. It flowed. It just happened. But the art of anything in comedy, and if you get to work comedy and work blue, that's cool too. There's even an art to that too. Comedians that swear do this swear all the time. Whatever they do, work blue. We're working blue, baby.
We're working blue. Almighty.
But your dialogue, that's the whole point. You're going on a national television, whatever audience you're going for. Just like you said, blood, we lead up to it. I have a friend that loves the big brawl that Flair and Sting and Muda and Terry Funk and all had at the end of one of the bashes, and Flair's bloody. He's like, I'll kick your ass. And
yeah,
it's the first time a lot of us heard ass on television. It was pay-per-view, mind you, but still they didn't do that. But he was so fired up, and it was the brawl that never ended. This is the brawl that never ends. Like, they kept fucking fighting everywhere. Like, Flair kept jumping, Funk kept jumping. It was insane, but it's got to be used in a crafty position, much like you said, like blood or any other gimmick, you know? If I come out, I think, well, back to the original question was time slot. That's a hard one. And nowadays, everything's thought of more meticulously. Like, okay, where's our demographic? Is our demographic Saturday morning? Is that where all these people are watching television? We're a lot smarter about that. It just used to be on Saturdays. And if I wanted to see it, I either recorded it with the VHS tape player. I know foreign to people out there. Or I missed it. And I never wanted to fucking miss it. And at one point in my life, the Chicago wrestling scene on television had it from AM to PM. Like, there was two NWA syndicated shows. There was a syndicated show going on, and I mean Jim Crockett Promotions. Worldwide was on UHF channel, and then TBS would be going when I finally got cable in Chicago. But WWF was already on in the morning. So was TBS already. World Class came on at 5. Like, you name it. And then Sunday mornings were guaranteed to be AWA at 11, yeah. 10 or 11. So it's just, I knew that's when wrestling was on, so I had to watch it. We had this conversation, Dennis, a little while back about, you know, are we programmed in our brain to see wrestling on Monday nights? Maybe so. I think, again, it's got to be must-see TV. No matter what it is, if word of mouth comes out, well, I got to watch this. Well, fuck, I got to watch it. Man, I got to watch this. I don't care that it's on Friday at 6 o'clock. I got to go out in an hour, but I want to check this out for.
I will say this. I say that a lot, apparently. Now, growing up in Georgia, not growing up, but living in Georgia in my teen years, it was Saturday night. I want to say from like 10 to 2 a.m., it was nothing but wrestling. And it was, you know, NWA, a little WCW, then there was a bunch of other smaller Southern promotions all in this block. And I feel like Access TV is slowly trying to pull that off with, you know, New Japan on, and they're becoming a wrestling network. Boy, if NWA could end up there and, you know, put NWA on in the later, you know, Saturday, Friday night time slot, I really feel like it would thrive in that kind of environment.
Well, so we were talking, she was asking about current NWA.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember this now. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm sorry. I totally didn't. I was thinking, never mind. Pass.
Do you want to read?
I think we said.
No. No, he's carry out. On.
And for that, I'm done. Billy in Detroit.
Well, you know what? I think what I did say is a Saturday yeah. night. I think I said a Saturday night program, which now is we got a collision. So I'm stoked.
Okay. Billy in Detroit. What was the best wrestling show or pay-per-view you guys have ever been to?
And I go back to when I was a kid, because that's when I enjoyed it more before I got into it. Being in it, it kind of kills it for me. So the two that I can remember, and you would never find this anywhere, is I remember being at the Rosemont Horizon when the Road Warriors teamed with maybe Crusher Blackwell, like, in a cage against the Freebirds. And the Road Warriors had the face paint. And this was at the Rosemont, now the Allstate. And Iron Man hits, they come out, But coming out first were the Freebirds, and they had the Union Jack. They had the Rebel flag on their, they painted that up on their face. I know not politically correct now, but that's what was going on. But it was the heat of that. Like, it was in the anticipation and the rumble of that building. And I was at Starrcade 87 here in Chicago. I'm in Orlando, but in Chicago at the UIC Pavilion, and got to see the Road Warriors against Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, hoping that that was going to be the night that the Road Warriors, you know, took it. Like, those are the fondest, those two shows live that I got to see. And then, mind you, I was first row watching Money in the Bank, where Punk took the title and fucking fucked off and went home. Like, the energy in that building, like, some people will still watch it and go, holy shit, look who I saw in the front row. And I'm like, I really wish I wasn't in the front row, because I had to act. I had to, like, I couldn't enjoy. I had to act like I was like, really, yeah, it's true, you know. But I enjoyed the atmosphere of that place. Like, I've only felt one other place rumble, but not comparable to the way that place rumbled. Not only when he came out, but when he won the title and left.
Yeah, I mean, so just to be clear, this is not a watching it. This is actually going to it,
going.
Being a spectator. I mean, my first thought was like one of the WrestleManias, but I would probably have to say, like, you know, Ace, you know, watching Punk win the IC belt from Regal at that Monday Night Raw was just how, because it was in Chicago, how electric it was, you know. That was one moment that I'll never forget. You know, just the way that the back and forth between the two, the way that they sold it, the facials, you know, because I was really watching it, you know, and in it. And it became, that wasn't my friend wrestling that guy, who's also my friend. But you know what I'm saying? It was like, it was legit. And so that was probably one of the great moments. Honestly, and I just witnessed a match between Alexander and Vinny at this West Coast Pro Show. It was the main event, and the way that the crowd was sucked into this indie match, but the story that was being told in the ring, the back and forth, I hadn't experienced that in a live event in a very, very, very long time. You know, watching that, you know, I'm on the corner and I'm watching it, and I'm in the back and forth and everything. There's not a flaw in this match that I can see. There's not anybody running the ropes after they went through 10 tables. It was all one hit lead. You know, everything made sense. It was one of the best put together matches I've seen in a very, very long time. It was incredible when professionals like you guys, Ace, put together a story and make every punch, every backdrop, every body slam, you know, everything matter. When it all matters, you know, whether it's taking them out and throwing them in a row of chairs and not immediately getting them up and throwing them another row of chairs and getting, you know, that's just like, it's once is enough. You know what I'm saying? Twice means you really fucking hate the guy, or you really got to do something to beat him, right? So, and that's exactly how this match was put together. And it was really, really, really unbelievable. And I have to give credit to those guys for putting together a match that way, you know, in today's modern age at an indie show. At the end, the 1-2-3, even was, though Vinny lost, everybody, every single fucking person, it was sold out. Standing room only, which they then sold. Everybody erupted. Even the boys and the girls from the back were out there going, oh my God, like emotionally invested. That to me, you can't replace that. You can't put a price on that either.
I've only been, I've been to a handful of center stage shows when it was WCW back in the day. And I love those because I was a kid and went with the Boy Scout troop, and that'll always be magical to me. I met Sting and Lex Luger, you know, being 12 and thing's still going. It's still magical to this day. I'll say the only pay-per-views I've ever been to are two Slammiversaries, and that's because I was riding Petey's coattails and he got me in for free. But to see him wrestle at a Slammiversary, since that's kind of their WrestleMania, might be because, you know, the 2018 or 19, I think it was his first, he came back on the Slammiversary and surprised everybody and then wrestled a year later on one. And being there for that, I would probably say that was the best watching, kind of like you guys, you know, you have emotional connection and then the crowd absolutely loves this guy. He's in his own town. And, you know, you kind of look around and go, wow, that's my friend that these guys are all behind rooting for him. And it makes it that much magical. So I'd say two Slammiversaries, but you know, yeah. Cool. So I know. Cool. I'm not as articulate as you guys because, you know, yeah, I sat back and listened and just loved Lars, the passion, the way you described that moment. I can't even come close to describing it with Petey. Not that that's two different atmospheres, but you were just more poetic than I was. So I loved it.
That's kind of my job, Dennis.
I know. Congratulations. Thank you for doing it. All right. Listen, let's put a bow on this. We're not going
an hour. I'm an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going an hour and 45 minutes like we did with Chris Harrow. Jesus Christ, Lars. You're so thankful not to have to.
I bet you an hour and 45 of Chris Hero would have probably felt like 35 minutes.
It did not feel like an hour and 45 in all fairness. You know what? I think Ace will even say this. We kind of had to force ourselves to end the show because a couple of times we're like, we're pushing 2 hours and we just kept talking like, all right, I'm going with it.
Yeah. When I threw out the post, I missed the day it dropped. So I reposted it yesterday, I believe. And I'm like, when I listened to it back just to hear if I said anything stupid, and I hadn't even scratched the surface of the things we could talk about. Like I was telling my wife today, I was like, all the things that we could touch on. Like we touched on just a minute part of not even a careers against each other or different. Like I said, I was in the business at least 10 years longer than he was, but to. Like I said, I felt there was a bit of a handicap because I had to figure out what indie wrestling was until it clicked. And I said, oh, fuck, this is what I got to do to get moving. So what do? You start a wrestling school. And but we learned a lot at the same time, even though I was elder and had some more experiences ahead of that. Like there's so much stuff to talk about, different eras, especially the time we lost track of each other. Like, you know, you're still kind of in touch. But social media does a great thing out there where you can, there's my buddy, you know, or do we actually talk? Like now we talk a little more, but that goes in and out. Like when I got to see him back at the PC, it was great to see him and I hadn't seen him in years, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, hour and a half, hour 45, hour, you know.
Well, Lars, welcome back. We missed you and we're going to miss you, Ace. Hopefully you will still kind of stay part of the family. At least once
a month. Always part of the family. Always a part of the family. So what? I'm coming around like once a month. Coming around like your worst nightmare.
No.
Yeah. I heard. I got it. I got it there. Fucking Polk High. 4 touchdowns, 1 game. Huh?
I love it. Thank you for noticing that, by the way. All right. Listen.
I noticed it right away.
And you didn't give it nothing? You left me hanging all show long.
I just put it over.
Finally, with like the last 8 seconds in the show. Thank you, everybody.
Quick question. Yeah. What the fuck's Polk High?
Well, you were busy being a rock star probably during this time period, but married with children.
You were living a different life.
Okay.
Yeah. Al Bundy, this is an Al Bundy Polk High shirt.
Oh. Gotcha.
4 touchdowns in the game. Greatest high school running back ever.
Gotcha. Great weight, Hooter Hunter.
All right. Listen. Thank you guys. We're back to normal. Ace, one last time. We definitely appreciate you. Lars and I, thank you so much.
Thank you. I love doing it. Love to be back. We'll talk this out and figure it out.
All right. See you in a month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.